After perhaps Penn State's best performance of the year, especially on offense, they dominated Maryland, as we expected. Sam Freeman from the Citizen's Voice. I'm Donnie Collins of the Times Tribune in Scranton, welcoming you to another edition of the Penn Stated Football Podcast ahead of Penn State's gargantuan matchup. All of a sudden, I think we probably knew, even after Ohio State, whatever you think of the Ohio State game, what that says about Penn State, they were still going to have this chance coming up. And eventually we'll get to what the chance means against Michigan this week, because it certainly means a lot, Sam. And, you know, I don't know if it means as much if they don't play as well as they did in Maryland on Saturday. And yeah, you know, I guess, you know, where I really want to start with this is I'm torn on this after that performance where they win 51-15. It's just, they're dominant in every facet. I don't know what that tells me moving forward. I don't know if this is just a series of 1 week performances that have no real tie to the week before and real no indication of what's coming the week after. But I talked to two players this morning. I asked both of them, is this the most confident the offense has been at any point this season? And one of them said, oh, we're confident every week, but pretty confident right now. And the other said, oh, most definitely the most confident the offense has been. So I think outside, definitely the most confident the outside world is in the offense, but Sam, how confident are you in the offense right now after what happened last week? Is that a 1 week thing that you'll see again if Michigan plays the Penn State offense the same way Maryland did, or is that just kind of something that happened last weekend against a team that never plays well against Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mixture. I kind of agree with everything you said about it's hard to tell how much this means. I mean, you know, it certainly means something because Penn State went out and played probably their best offensive game this season. So it's not that doesn't count for anything. You know, it happened. But how much of it is like you said, a team that historically has not played Penn State well. You saw some of the players after the game, you know, retweeting old Maryland posts, you know, when Maryland beat Penn State and sort of gloated about it and put the graphic up in Beaver Stadium. So, you know, it's to me, it's safe to say some of those players maybe harbor a little bit of extra resentment against them going in. And, you know, Chop Robinson missing, you know, as a transfer from Maryland was clearly an emotional push. And I know that's defensively, but, you know, so it's there's elements to this Penn State Maryland history that I think, you know, affect your takeaways from this game, certainly. But if there was ever a time for them to start hitting their stride, it would be before Michigan. You know, I don't doubt that the offense is probably feeling more confident than they have in the past, because, you know, this is the offense that people were sort of expecting coming into this year, I feel like. You know, all the hype around Drew Aller, all the hype around the running backs, you know, even, you know, I'm sure we'll get to this soon, but even Dante Cephas starts, you know, pulling some stuff together. This is the offense that people have sort of started, they expected coming into the season. And, you know, there's no better time for this team to start putting that together than before probably the best team it's going to play all season in Michigan.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy for sure, because you can't measure confidence. And it's always a funny thing. I've talked about it before, and I'm probably boring people with it by now, but a confident team is a good team. And a good team without confidence is not a good team. They become a bad team. And I think you saw that a little bit against Ohio State. They give Ohio State too much credit, whatever the thing might be with why they don't go out there and play well, even when they have a team that should. Maryland's not bad. And I think that's where I kind of get lost on Penn State a little bit sometimes, is Maryland is a decent team. They have a really good quarterback in Talia Tungavailoa, really, really good quarterback. Their running game on paper should be better than minus 53 yards. And they weren't, but they should be better than minus 53 yards. So I think they're I think they're a better team in that facet. Their receivers, and I mentioned this during the game, if you give Penn State Maryland's receivers, I think Penn State's still undefeated. Because Jayshon Jones is a really good player. Caden Prather is a very good player. Penn State wanted him for the longest time on the recruiting trail. Even the tight end if you want to include him, Dyches is a pretty good player. I think Maryland has weapons, and they've had weapons every year. They really are not that bad an offensive team. Defensively, they put players in the NFL. I mean, it seems like every year Maryland has a first or second round pick in the secondary. And you look at their numbers, they typically play Ohio State pretty well. You know, there's been years they gotten blown out, but that's Ohio State. They play Michigan tough. They've played some good opponents tough. They never play Penn State tough down in at their home stadium at SECU Stadium. It doesn't make any sense. There's just this level of confidence that Penn State has against Maryland. And maybe it's that attitude that they have that carries it. But I think to a degree, Maryland looks at it as, you know, we can't beat them. We can't beat them here. Haven't beaten them here since 1961. They play like it. I'd be a hypocrite, I think, if I sat here and said that confidence matters in that game and doesn't matter this week against Michigan. So, you know, I don't know if I saw anything that's going to bring me off of what my prediction is going to be for this week. But did we see a more polished Drew Aller? Yes. Did we see a more physical Catron Allen? Yes. Did we see an offensive line that protected the quarterback well and opened up a lot of holes? We did. And most importantly, I think we saw Dante Cephas kind of take a step up. And he's the guy I think becomes totally the X factor this week, because, you know, you look at what he did. Now, it's one thing, you see a lot of one-on-one coverage. You see a lot of, you see it. They said more cover zero than they'd seen in the entire season. Theo Johnson told me after the game there wasn't as much cover zero as James Franklin maybe made it sound like there was. But the players definitely told me there was more, because cover zero, if you play a lot of that, you're going to beat it more often than not. You want to see, as a quarterback, you want to see cover zero. But he said there was a lot of cover one, a lot of man coverage. And the guy like Cephas, all of a sudden, hey, I'm more talented than these guys. And he went out and played like it. So if they get that kind of performance out of Dante Cephas this week, that's a big boon for Penn State. I don't know if you could paint that picture any other way than to say that. So why wouldn't a confident Penn State team be able to beat Michigan? Convince me they couldn't.
Yeah, I think you're right on about the confidence element. I mean, I think that, you know, like you said, it's not measurable, but, you know, when you're confident, there's certain things that you, you know, consider doing or you do that you otherwise wouldn't, right? I mean, it's the difference between maybe playing a little bit timid and you know, playing open, you know, whatever that means to you. Maybe that's play calling. Maybe that's, you know, the reads that you're taking. Maybe it's, you know, this, that, the other thing. This team is never boring. I'll tell you that much. You know, just when, you know, they string together two performances against Ohio State and then Indiana that are, you know, fairly underwhelming, they come out the week before Michigan and play like this. You know, as you said, does this impact strongly my prediction on the game? You know, I don't necessarily know, but it creates enough confusion that you have to think about it. You know, coming into the Maryland game, I would have said, yeah, Michigan rolls. Maybe they still do, but it's something you got to think about now.
Here's my one quibble with the offense from last week, and it has nothing to do with Drew, nothing to do with the receivers. It has nothing to do with the ridiculous Bo Prabula package, which I think they did a good job getting on film. That was a really smart way to use that. And the fact that he didn't throw the ball to Bo when nobody covered him, I think is perfect. I have some concerns that the run game is, and I would never have said this. We discussed this a little bit, maybe 5-6 episodes ago. I would never have thought this, but they're better off just using Catron, right? I mean, at this point, Catron Allen's the better back. And if he's not the better back, the offense is better when he's the running back. And that makes him the better option. Nick Singleton has struggled a little bit. I don't think he's a bad back. What they're doing in the running game well does not suit Singleton. And what they're doing is two series for one, two series for the other, two series for the first. And they're playing it fair. And they're splitting it 50-50 down the middle for two very big-time recruits. And I think at this point, if you see that against Michigan, you're handcuffing your offense. You have to go with the hot hand. And if that's Singleton, great. Keep him in there, because there's been games he's been the hot hand. but there's been more games where Catron's the hot hand at this point, and he was last week. And I don't think it affected them at all. They were going to win the game no matter what because of the way Drew played and the way the receivers played. But against Michigan, you got to run the ball. And I think this is a perfect week where if you're looking at 30 carries, Catron better get 22 of them.
I always hesitate to talk box score because the box score doesn't really tell the whole story, and everybody knows that. But against Maryland, Nick having, you know, 8 for 20, it's just not – it's not what you expect coming into the season, right? I mean, especially in comparison. I mean, I feel like entering the season, the sort of conversation was Catron's maybe the more reliable, consistent, you know, if you need 2 yards, he'll get you 4. If you need 6 yards, he'll get you 4, you know, and Singleton is the home run hitter, you know, and that probably doesn't, you know, it probably doesn't give Catron enough credit even coming into the season. But I don't have any rebuttal to your observation about the Catron versus Nick thing. I mean, they're both talented backs. They both have a place on the team. They both deserve touches. But right now, you know, with following the hot hand, with that as the strategy, I mean, it's the numbers are indisputable right now about Catron. Now, it's not to say Nick couldn't go out there and you know, pop a 60-yard runoff at some point in the game, but that has to happen for us to start.
Yeah,
putting that into the equation, and that hasn't really happened yet. And I don't think you can enter the biggest game of the season, especially now after losing to Ohio State, and start taking swings when you don't know if they're going to connect because they haven't connected all year.
Yeah, you were in this area now that's called November. I think it was Olu after the game said this is when November is championship level football. And if you want to be a champion, you got to play well in November. And I think in 2016. That's what Penn State did very, very well. They played well in November. Last year, they played well in November, but you know they had lost the second game before that. So now if you play the championship level football, quote unquote, in November, you are putting yourself in position if you're Penn State to do something. But the other thing is to play the championship level football, you have to play your championship level players. And we're 8 games into the season, 9 games into the season now. I forget which. 9 games in. Wow. Nick hasn't broken the big one. I don't want to say he can't, and I don't want to say he hasn't had a big role in the offense. He has. And I would argue he's had a big role the last couple of weeks because he's had a couple of kickoff returns that have really set Penn State up. And I think there are ways to get Singleton going in the run game, but running the same plays that work for Catron aren't the same plays that work for Nick. But the reason I think that is something Drew said this morning. He was asked a question about how do you get better? How have you gotten better? How are you going to get better? You know, the same innocuous question you get about improvement and where you've been and where you're going and yada, yada, yada. But one of the things Drew said was you only get X amount of plays in a game. So if I'm getting 65 plays as the quarterback, I have to love the 65 plays. And we're getting closer to where I love the 65 plays we're calling. And that makes sense. Because it tells me that that's Mike Yurcich figuring out Drew a little bit. That's Drew figuring out what he does well. And the offense gets better when you have a quarterback who feels comfortable. And it would get better if you have a running game that feels comfortable too. And I'm not saying they don't, because half of the running game has been pretty good. Catron has been really, really decent this year. Probably better than that. I think we're underrating him a little bit. But Nick has not gotten it going. And there's been some weeks he's been fine where he's learning to get those tough yards and finishing runs and things like that. But I think there's this thought out there that's not what Nick is. That Nick is a guy who could break the occasional big one. That he's more Saquon, and that's probably unfair, that he's more Saquon than he is Evan Royster or something like that. And right now he's been more Evan Royster than Saquon. And I think the offense takes another step if Nick figures out, hey, how do I get to the edge? How do I get one-on-one? How do I beat a guy that I should be able to beat on the corner, run over a guy who I'm bigger and stronger than? Because that's Nick's game. But right now, he's meeting too much resistance at the line that Catron isn't meeting. And there's got to be something more to it than the offensive line blocks differently for Catron than for Nick. I think Catron sees the field a little differently than Nick does, but that doesn't mean there's not a role for Nick. I just wonder, you know, if you're going to grind out those 4 or 5 yard carries and against a team like Michigan, who's not going to play cover one, cover zero, whatever, they're going to do what Ohio State did and force you to take what they're giving you, which is not going to be much. But Catron's a guy who takes what he's got that ability to just take what is given. I don't know if Nick is that guy, but Nick has made his mark by catching the occasional pass, by the kickoff return. But if Cephas is now going to be a bigger part of things in the passing game, and he needs to be, I don't know where Nick's touches come from. So I think that's a real interesting question. That's probably, you know, not what Penn State wants to be considering this week, but I think it's really an interesting kind of take on how do you win the game offensively. You go with your strengths, right? Isn't Catron the strength right now? So I think I don't mind playing Nick. I don't mind Singleton getting in there at all and getting his chances, because who knows, maybe this is a game where he turns it on a little bit. But I don't think you go into this thinking, hey, we're going to do two series for you and keep it fair, because this is not the time to be fair anymore. This is the time to win the game. You have to win the game. It's a must win. Penn State cannot lose.
It, especially, if, I mean, there's still things to play for. You know, the season is not, you know, despite what some might have said after Ohio State, you know, the season's not done. You know, this is a must win game to keep some of your options open. And like you said, I mean, the time for fairness was early in the season, as you're figuring out your identity, as you're figuring out this. The whole point of the fairness is to give everybody, you know, an equal shot, an equal opportunity. And now you got to go with what works. Like you said, it's November, and it's sort of go time.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it sound like they're splitting carries. They're clearly not. Statistically, they're not. I mean, last week it was much more Catron. So I think they're leaning toward that or edging toward it, but part of that was that Drew had such a big game on, you know throwing the ball and look, I think part of it there is Drew's confidence level is high. He said after the game, I don't know if you read that. I think I put this in one of my stories. I don't know if you read it, but he said after the game, I was shocked. Something clicked for him against Indiana on that last series. And he had really, he was asked about the questions about the interception. Are you glad you threw the interception? Because there was a couple of guys who said that, and I respect that opinion, but you know, you would rather not throw the interception. And if there was anything to that, like, oh, it takes a burden off you that you've thrown an interception and survived it. Oh, now you can go and play free and loose. Then quarterbacks will be throwing intentional interceptions occasionally to get themselves, you know, feeling good. And that's not how you play quarterback. So obviously I don't think Drew is ever going to say, no, I love throwing that interception. I think it made him really angry that he did that. He really recoiled on that question the week before, but then after the game, he comes back and says, no, I really feel like that moment changed me. I don't think it was the interception. I think it was more the pass to Keandre, where he saw the one-on-one coverage and just said, all right, I'm doing it. This is our chance. I'm doing it. And I think I went back and watched the Maryland game. I think every time he saw one-on-one coverage, he threw the ball to that receiver. Every time. And you saw the game. There were some throws that he made that should have been caught that weren't. And there were some that I would say shouldn't have been caught, but they were terrific throws. And it would have been really tough catches, but he put it on there. So I think it was a real clinic for the guy to have that kind of a game. What did you see that kind of from him? Am I off base on that to suggest?
No, I think that that's pretty on base. I think you're pretty on target on. I mean, you know, it felt like Drew was, you know, I'm with you on the interception stuff because
it's nonsense. It just, it
really, yeah, it's,
is.
It's it very storybook. Interception.
Yeah.
But I sort of brought this up last week, and I wish I had fleshed it out better, but I made that comparison to Trevor Lawrence in the playoff game last year when he threw four picks in the first half. And what I think the strength of that anecdote comes from, isn't, you know, him throwing four picks, obviously, and feeling like, oh, now I can go do whatever I want because the game's over. I think it's the strength is, you know, making a bad mistake and then being talented enough to still win the game and overcome that adversity. And so, you know, the strength, like you said, comes from that pass to Keandre going, you know, yeah, I made a mistake, and not now I made the mistake, now I'm free. It's I made the mistake. I overcame it because I'm a good enough player that I can overcome mistakes. And I think that's the freeing aspect of it, right? And it sounds like that's how Drew feels, you know, is coming out of that game, you know, I feel more confident. And it makes sense, right? I can understand, and again, I'm now putting words and thoughts into him, but it's certainly possible that you play the safe style of offense because you haven't really tested it yet. You haven't really tested your skill set throughout the year, you know, and you have that bit of wonder in your head. Am I just skating by? Frankly, I think that's what a lot of pundits and stuff were thinking throughout the season. You know, it's all the questions about, you know, throw it deep no matter what. You know, we haven't seen them throw it deep. Is it because they can't? You know, and I think that pass to Keandre showed, you know, to everybody, but also to Drew, like, no, we can. And so he comes out to Maryland and goes, I think it's an amalgamation of everything we've been talking about. I think Penn State comes in with the confidence that, hey, we're not going to lose this game. You know, Penn State's saying we're just a better team than Maryland. You know, so they have that extra oomph with some of their decision making, that extra oomph on some of those plays. And then Drew is also entering the game going, yeah, if I throw an interception, it's not the end of the world. I'm not thrilled because I'm never going to be happy that I threw an interception, but I know now that I have what it takes to overcome that, and we're a good enough team that we can find those opportunities and take them.
Confidence comes from a lot of different places, and it's not just your quarterback. I mean, Drew made a lot of big time throws on Saturday, and that didn't surprise me. I've seen Drew make enough big time throws, and especially even dating back to last year, to think, oh, this guy can do it. A couple of plays that stood out to me in the game: the second touchdown to Cephus. The first one was an incredible catch, incredible throw. I mean, the guy did a great job. I was even more impressed by the second one because he got some separation on the cornerback, and he was the top Maryland cornerback too. So I thought that's a good, that was still, I believe. I thought that was a big time route by Cephus to just kind of go out and manhandle a really good cornerback who's probably going to play in the NFL. And Drew puts it on the numbers. So I thought that play was big for Penn State. But defensively, and this is where this team's confidence comes from. Let's be honest. The fourth and one early where Jalen Reed and Jacobs tackle Dyches. That's your game right there. Maryland makes that play. Hey, who knows? You know, their quarterback, Tagovailoa, is off to a 17 for 17 start in that game. He was making some big throws. He really was. They made some good catches for him, but it just never seemed like that was going to amount to very much the way the defense played again. And, you know, you go back to Indiana where Drew makes the 57-yard pass to win it, drops it in the can, right where you. Keandre is going to make a really nice play on it and take off. But that play, I wonder if it's a different kind of feeling if Indiana goes in and scores there, but the defense gets a three and out. So this team really defensively is still carrying Penn State. And that's not a knock on the offense, but I think that's how this team's got to play this week against Michigan. If they want to turn this season around, they need to play the style they should have played against Ohio State. And only just do it against Michigan at home, where it's a kind of a different feeling. And speaking of a different feeling, Sam, I have some great news. We have a special guest for our next segment. This will be a whole lot of fun. A Michigan fan, our colleague Joe Barace. He was on last year. He's got a lot of explaining to do, and we'll talk to Joe coming up in a moment. Sam, Penn State does have a big game this week, and we're done talking about Maryland. We're putting it in the past. We're pulling a James Franklin here. We're just moving on. We'll talk about, I guess, the Michigan game, since it's what we got on the schedule this week. Just another game in the Big Ten. Just the next game on the schedule for Penn State. But we have a special guest this week, Northeastern Pennsylvania's resident Michigan man, Connor Stallions. Oh wait, no, Joe Barace from the Times Tribune Sports Desk joining us. Joe, how are we doing this week? You nervous?
I'm doing wonderful, Donnie. Thank you for having me back on. Nervous is not the word. I'll say that.
Oh, okay. So let me ask you this, Joe. A lot of talk about Jim Harbaugh this week. maybe not coaching the game because of a suspension of some kind for something. I don't know what's going on up there. Maybe you could fill us in on that. But if Jim Harbaugh doesn't coach this week, what is the feeling there that you have with Michigan? Is that, how big a toll does that take on the team, if any? I don't know that it really does. I think if anything, players rally around that and try to kind of really set in and focus.
Is something happening? I thought we were just playing Penn State, and you know, that's
the next game on the schedule, Joe. It's the next game on the schedule.
So, you know, it's weird. You know, as a fan, I had thought that without having for the first three games, it's weird to say because Michigan hasn't played anyone. But like, I felt like they didn't play as well in the first three games as they did when Jim Harbaugh was back. So I don't know. It's really weird to say that considering they've just been destroying teams, but I don't know. I wouldn't like if Jim Harbaugh wasn't coaching. That's for sure. But I don't know. Michigan's been doing everything they should be doing, and I kind of like the theory too of they're going to play well, like inspired football, like they have been honestly since this scandal has started.
What about JJ McCarthy here, Joe? That's impressed you this year. It seems like, you know, I think the Heisman talk this year with him, if he plays well against Penn State and Ohio State, all right, then he's got to be the front runner. I don't know, you know, Penix has gotten a lot of buzz with that. Michael Penix, to me, I've seen Michael Penix at Indiana. I don't know if he's the best player in college football. Certainly having a great season, but McCarthy's up there. My vote right now, I would say, would go to Harrison for Heisman. Yeah. But he's beaten a couple of teams that could tie their shoes. I'm not sure Michigan has. What are you seeing from McCarthy that leads you to believe this guy will play well against a good quality opponent this week, and at least a good quality opponent? I would say for the first time all year, really, it's amazing that they're on the old Syracuse basketball schedule where they don't leave New York until February.
So do you think Michigan should have kept Cade McNamara?
I do not. I think that was a good idea to let Cade McNamara go.
I mean, it's also easy to say this year, but when we talked about it last year, I did like the change to exclusively McCarthy. I always thought he had a higher ceiling. I obviously like what he's doing this year. Here's the thing, though. And you said it, they haven't played anybody yet. And I hate to say that as a Michigan fan, but it's true. And when we're going into last year's Penn State game, even, I was harping on it's time to prove it. Now they've obviously proven they could win the Big Ten twice, get to the playoff. But I still think they have to do it again. I have concern with, because again, the last meaningful, really high leverage game they played in was TCU, and they lost. We know how that went.
Well, in their defense, they didn't have the signs, Joe.
I knew it was coming. I mean, you held off long enough. I'll say that. Donnie, I just think other teams need to try harder. I mean, clearly we want to win more than everybody else. That's how I see it. But you know, the worry is, I know this isn't totally part of your question, is that when Michigan got down against TCU, it became a shootout, and I don't think Michigan had much experience from playing from behind last year. So this is really kind of a prove that you could beat a quality team, and a team that you should absolutely beat by, honestly, more than a touchdown. So it's not only a prove-it game for McCarthy as far as a Heisman potential, it's a prove-it game for Michigan, and they're obviously going to go in highly motivated.
Yeah, I thought, you know, the whole sign-stealing thing aside, and you know, we like to joke here on the Penn State Football Podcast, Sam and I, about stealing signs, but Yeah, I think the thing for me looking back at the last game they lost, which, you look at it as that's the only game they probably wouldn't have had signals or whatever, but I don't think it mattered. I mean, they what did they score in that game? They scored enough to win.
45, yeah,
Yeah,
45.
they score enough to win, and McCarthy played badly. I
Yeah.
mean, it was not his bet. He threw a couple of interceptions, didn't take care of the football. I think that's a game that James Franklin would use as an example of the importance of taking care of the football. So it cost Michigan a chance at the national championship. It really did. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but I think you look at McNamara as kind of the X factor. Because if he plays well, I don't know how Penn State is. Penn State's defense good enough to control that offense? Because you mentioned earlier, Cade McNamara. Am I calling him McNamara or McCarthy? I'm getting McCarthy and McNamara mixed up. It is so difficult.
You did just call McNamara McCarthy
Yeah,
there,
I'm
but
talking
that's
about McCarthy because when you're from Scranton, the McNamaras and the McCarthys are the same people.
You're not wrong,
Yeah.
Donnie.
So
I've called JJ McCarthy Jake McCarthy like multiple
I called Jake McCarthy JJ McCarthy. We're watching we were when we were in Northwestern, one of my colleagues and I were out to dinner, and I said, "Oh, JJ McCarthy is playing for the Diamondbacks tonight." And he's like, "What?" I says, "Oh, it's Jake McCarthy, and we all know and love Jake here in Scranton. So, and or Joe McCarthy or whoever, and Jerry McNamara, they're all the same guy."
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, but I guess what I was trying to say was, you were talking earlier about a Cade McNamara going to Iowa, and I last year I am of the opinion that you don't just let a quarterback who wins go. Now, clearly McCarthy is a better, he has a higher upside quarterback than McNamara. I mean, McCarthy's going to be an NFL guy, and I'm not
Right.
sure McNamara is, but you look at the Michigan offense. I don't know if it gets enough credit because I would have thought losing Eric Gall would have been a big deal, and it really I think the guy they kept was better. But Michigan's got, Roman Wilson's a good player, and they're obviously their backs are really, really good, and their line, I love their line last year. Michigan's defense is going to get a lot of the attention coming into this game from the Penn State side, but offensively, I think they've been really good. And obviously they've been really good because they haven't played very many people, but they should be okay. Unless those receivers really can't match up with like Johnny Dixon and Daquan Hardy and Kalen King. Sam, I'm gonna include you on this one because we've mentioned this a few times kind of as a joke, but I don't know. When you talk about Michigan not having quote unquote played anybody, does that matter? Penn State's played someone and lost to them. Does Penn State have a better chance because they play loud like crap against Ohio State, but Ohio State happens to be good? That's I think I don't know what to really think about that right now because Michigan's played great against bad competition. Penn State played lousy against great competition. What's the difference?
There's obviously a difference in quality of opponent, but as you said, if you go out and play poorly against good competition, then you didn't really accomplish much. But part of a question I have for Joe ties into this. I do wonder if as we were talking about in the first segment with Drew, this is Drew's first year starting. It's really his first exposure to some of the trials and tribulations of quarterbacking because I know he got into games last year even against Michigan, but it was in a relief capacity behind Sean Clifford. I don't know that you can really, that experience isn't worthless, but when it comes to playing as a starting quarterback in these games, I don't think it matters that much. But now coming into the Michigan game, now Drew has a start against a quality opponent. Now, he didn't play great. It was, arguably his worst game of the season. But from Drew's perspective, it's maybe it helps players like him, going out and playing poorly, but you played. You know what I mean? I'm starting to border on moral victory territory here. But it at least has Drew entering the Michigan game, and it's not his first attempt at playing a good opponent. And I know you want to pose that same question to Joe, but I'll tack on a little addendum to it. Joe, you've seen Drew throughout this season. You've seen him at his low. You've seen him at the, you know, the pre just throw it deep question, you know, that sort of dink and dunk style safe offense. And now you saw him against Maryland. How much stock do you put in a performance like Maryland for Drew Aller entering a game against Michigan's defense? Do you rate that highly? Do you think it's too little too late? You know, what is your perspective as somebody who's going to have a team go into this game and face Drew Aller?
I think it's a little, twofold. You know, I would say, yes, he absolutely had his worst game against Ohio State, but it was Ohio State at Ohio State. So it makes, you know, I mean, it makes sense. I guess the good that has come out of it, and Donnie has written about this, is that he gets that Ohio State game under his belt. Just a really weird, bad victory for you guys against Indiana, but a victory. And, you know, he throws that deep ball, and then he has a strong game against Maryland. And I think that has to mean something. You know, I would rather, as a Michigan fan, I'd rather him not be on, you know, on the mend, but it seems like that he has grown, you know what I mean? From Ohio State to Indiana to Maryland, I think he has absolutely grown. He started to develop, you know, Cephas got involved last game. And so you've got to think, like, absolutely, like he's grown, and I'd rather face a quarterback who, you know, isn't playing very well. But you ask against Maryland too, that's a team that Penn State has owned against. Again, Donnie has written about it, but, you know, Penn State has absolutely owned Maryland. And I don't know how much that is saying, but I think it absolutely means something. But does it scare me as a Michigan fan? No, not really. yeah, so I think twofold. I think he's absolutely growing and has shown more now what he can be than he has in the previous two games.
Here's what would scare me as a Michigan fan. It's maybe the only thing that would scare me. They don't play well at Beaver Stadium. They've won, but they've also lost. You know, if you look at what Michigan does against Penn State in Ann Arbor against what Michigan does against Penn State in State College, it's not similar. It's just a different environment. I think this is, it's weird because Ohio State, I think it's what you see with Ohio State's what you get. And you could play them in a back alley. You could play them in Columbus. You could play them in Vegas. You could play them anywhere, and you're going to get that team. And the thing with Penn State is you're going to get a bad version in Columbus. You're going to get a bad version, you know, you're going to get a bad version wherever they play Ohio State, but you're going to get a good version of them against Michigan at home. And you're going to get a really bad version of Penn State against Michigan in Ann Arbor, if that makes sense. But I don't quite grasp why Beaver Stadium is kind of a house of horrors for Michigan, but it has been. They didn't play well there in a couple of whiteout games. Didn't, like, 2 years ago, you know, they got the touchdown from, it was Jerry McNamara, I believe, through the pass to all. And so but they win late, and they win ugly with a good team. So do you have any kind of feel for why they've struggled a little bit in Beaver Stadium? And if history means things, and I don't know that it necessarily does, I'm not sold on it, but if the past means something, is that something that you know, it could be a detriment to Michigan this week? Are they going to go into a place where they don't generally play well and play well? Now, I would respond to that if I were you and say, well, they went into Columbus and won, and they never play well there.
That's true. Two words for you, Mario Manningham. No, I'm kidding.
That was it. That was in Ann Arbor.
Was it? Oh, yeah, I guess it
oh,
was.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I thought it was at Penn State.
I remember that bad one well.
Okay, fair. That is true. That was a big
guy. I was there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I like ran around my house. I was so excited. But anyway, sorry, that was not your question. And it turns out it wasn't even relevant. So
we'll just strike
now,
that from the record. It never happened.
Yeah. Just
Mark
strike
that as
that
an
part.
edit.
So you bring up a good point, and I think when I was listening to this podcast 2 weeks ago, you said that Penn State used to be on par with Michigan, and it was so weird because, like, you would have us, you would host us at Beaver Stadium with the whiteout game and destroy us, and then you guys would go to the Big House and we'd destroy you. It was just a weird thing where, you know, And I did feel like the teams were on the same level, and it's just so weird that happened from year to year. It's changed a little bit over the previous two, but well, and like you said, the last time they were there, it was a close game. I do want to say that things have changed, but I am a little nervous, and to kind of go back to Sam's point a little bit, like, having Aller at home in this game, I think, is going to help a lot more than him having to go to Columbus. And the points that you made are absolutely sound on the fact that Michigan really doesn't play that well in Happy Valley. So it's a little, I don't know. Again, I don't want to say nervous, but I would definitely prefer this one on the Big House. I don't really know why. Oh heck, if it were an Astros situation, I would just less like, we're being fed the signs in our home stadium. But you know, yeah, that's it. It is strange, but you know, the atmosphere absolutely seems to matter when Michigan comes to town.
You know, I have to ask you now about the signs. It's such a Michigan story, and I think everybody's talking about it, but I don't know if we've heard outside of anybody on social media the Michigan fan take on that. And I'm going to ask you, and these are admittedly hypothetical questions, and they're going to come off as smart alecky, but they're really not. And the first one, and I think, you know, we've all had team. I don't know about Sam, maybe not, but I think we've all rooted for teams in the past that have done some questionable crap. I remember in the World Series when it was the playoffs, when A-Rod knocked the ball out of the first baseman's mitt, and it was Kevin Millar's mitt or something like that with the Red Sox. And like, part of me as a fan wanted to be like, oh, that's awesome. But I knew that's not great for the game. And I thought,
right.
I thought, oh man, that's embarrassing. What's your take on the sign stealing thing? The whole scandal, kind of, I don't want to even call it a scandal because I don't know how this is all going to turn out, but what's your take on it? If Michigan did what the evidence is piling up to suggest Michigan did, as a Michigan fan, are you embarrassed by it? Are you, what are you? I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know how I would view it if it was my team that did this.
Yeah, let me try to parse through this as best I can. When it first came out, I was just like, oh, come on, this is something that, like, everyone's doing, and Michigan got caught. That was like my first thought. And then, like, it started to build, and Sam knows this because I talked to him about it in the office, and I was just like, you know what, I'm just gonna lean into it and have fun and just be like, yeah, we have your signs, we're trying harder than everyone else, but ultimately, it's interesting because when the Astros sign stealing happened, I wondered what it would be like if I were a fan of the Astros. Now, weirdly, it feels like I'm a fan of the Astros. so it does feel, it feels very strange. And here's, I guess, here's really the thing with when it comes to you. I really feel like these are kind of similar situations, obviously, like legitimately sign stealing. But I think the thing with it's twofold with the Astros. I think the thing that bothered us the most with the Astros was the arrogance with which they did it. And then obviously they got away with it. And then they go and win the 2021 World Series. And it's just like, you know, you look up, or I'm sorry, was it 2022, I think, right? Yeah. So, but anyway, and I said right after they won it in the office, I was just like, so what does this mean? And I think, I don't want to credit someone in the office said, they're a really good team. It's just so disappointing to push it to Michigan. It's just like the Astros didn't have to do that, but we'll never really know. Like, it'll always be tainted. So let's say that Michigan wins out and, you know, wins a national championship. Who knows if that'll happen? We got a really long way to go. But that happens. It will always be tainted. Like, we'll never really know if, you know, they could have done it without the sign stealing. And to circle back to the arrogance real quick, the fact that they've got this guy on the sideline with a Central Michigan hat, sunglasses, the only thing that's missing on that guy is a fake mustache. It's just like the arrogance by the way that this is done. You know, I think that it's happening elsewhere too, just like it was happening in baseball, as evidenced by some ex-college football staffer who said someone had Michigan signals. Yeah, so it's a weird feeling, and it just feels like no matter what happens from here on out, it'll always be tainted.
Will it be tainted to you if they win the national championship? I mean, as a fan,
not at all. I'm gonna get great. The gear, okay. Donnie.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Is it? I mean, I don't know one Astros fan who regrets banging on the garbage cans. Not at all.
Exactly. And you know, it's how I look at it is I'm not gonna let something take away my enjoyment of it. You know, I'm not going to stop liking Michigan or anything like that. So I might as well just root for them. And I think the difference here too is with the Astros, they're professional athletes and they knew exactly what they were doing. This is like, you know, you're dealing with college kids and they're not stealing the signs or anything.
But they're reaping every benefit of having the call. And the situation
it.
Now,
you know it. I get what you're saying.
Now, here's my question for you, and this is a serious hypothetical question, and I think Sam will be able to probably answer this as well. If Ryan Day got caught with the same amount of evidence, would the death penalty be enough of a punishment for him? In your mind, question. Because
from a Michigan fan's perspective,
I mean, it might not be. It might be no matter what the speeding ticket or whatever.
True. Absolutely. I'd be sitting up here saying, see, this is why they're good. They're stealing all our signs. Like, oh, you know it. It's fandom's weird, man. But it's true. I absolutely would be saying they'd be stealing, you know, if they've been stealing our signs and this is why they're beating us. So like I understand the reaction, but I guess looking at it, being a Michigan fan, I'm trying to search for the perspective of, like, you know, and I'm kind of just hoping that, like, everyone else is doing this in the end. I'm hoping this, like, opens up. And, like, can we just, like, evolve college football and prevent, like, all these signals and stuff? And, you know, maybe the game needs to evolve a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the Matt Rhule argument with the headsets and
exactly.
And, you know, but yeah, I get that, and I would understand that a little bit if the rule didn't say you can't do it, you can't send someone into another stadium and whatever. Yeah, I think schools deserve some of the responsibility for that too. I mean, Central Michigan can't have Connor Stallions on their side. They have some guy on their sideline. They don't know who it is. Like, come on, guys.
Exactly.
Sam, what's the worst thing one of the teams you've rooted for has ever done in an attempt to win a game?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I'm a Cowboys fan.
Oh, so everything they've ever done.
Yeah, so probably not only are they inept, but probably the string of criminals they love to they love to just sign.
That's a great, that's, does that take away from it? For it obviously it does. I mean, you weren't around in the 90s, I don't think, were you?
No.
Okay, so oh my God, oh, this is bad. But yeah, everybody on that team was a criminal except for Emmett Smith. I met Emmett Smith before. What a nice man. Joe, were you there when we met Emmett Smith? Did you meet Emmett Smith?
I did not meet, no.
Oh,
No, I
Herb
didn't have
did.
the
Oh, Herb
opportunity.
Smith. Our,
Oh, there you go.
yeah, Her, yeah, it was Herb and I were there. Met Emmett Smith. Emmett Smith is a very nice man. All those other guys, criminals. Now, whether they were or not, that's their reputation. But they were, the dirtiest, nastiest players, and they won all the time. And you know who hated them? Everybody outside of Dallas. Everybody.
It's true. It's
It's
true.
just it's insane. Like, I've had. I mean, the Yankees have been accused of everything with the steroid. The A-Rod with the steroids. The A-Rod with the, knocking the ball out of the glove. A-Rod probably a lot of things. But it's and I what I don't get with it, and I think I don't know. Maybe it's because I do the job I do, but I would rather lose than win dirty. I don't know. It's just me, but I know 99.98% of fans would rather just win and just do it. And I think that's probably an accurate representation of it. And that's true everywhere except for Happy Valley, where they want you to win with, success with honor, but please do win every week, no matter what. So I want to bring up something before we sign off here and give our predictions. It's going to be prediction time here in a minute because it's a big game. So one of the joys of my job is I get all the time these press releases, but I get a lot of betting line stuff, and I don't look at betting line stuff unless it's really important. And I think this is ultra, ultra important for this discussion. According to Bovada, which I guess is a gambling website, you guys might know better. I don't gamble. Ryan Day would be a favorite in a celebrity boxing match to beat Jim Harbaugh. I would bet my house on Harbaugh. Don't know what you guys are laughing at. I would bet my house on him. Ryan Day is -220. Harbaugh's +155. And I have no idea what
Saying
that
Ryan
means.
Day's not tough?
Harbaugh's a professional athlete. And he's a maniac. He's a total loose cannon. I don't I, he You ever guys ever watch his press conferences? He breathes through his mouth during these press. He is an absolute maniac. He is singularly focused on winning. He will find a way. Harbaugh beats Harbaugh in round one against Ryan Day in a boxing match.
I totally agree with you. How do they figure that Ryan Day is the favorite in that matchup? I don't understand.
Yeah,
I
that's
think,
baffling.
yeah, I think Day is scrappy. I think he's
Oh,
got some
sure.
things going for him. I think he's got a lot of things going for him. Number one, he's a good sized guy. Number two, he's very, very scrappy. And number three, he hates the bejesus out of Jim Harbaugh. So he's going to try to win. But
Sure.
Harbaugh, he's going to take training very seriously. He's going to cheat to win, as we've seen. He's going to, he'll have, he'll
Calm
have
down,
the,
calm down.
he'll have, he'll take the padding out of the gloves. He'll do what he's got to do. Stallions in the corner, whatever he's got to have. But I really think that, yeah, we're undervaluing that this man was a professional athlete. People look at him as,
Exactly.
oh, Michigan's coach. He was a mediocre quarterback who won a lot of games. You have to be really tough to do that.
Right. Do you guys remember, like, I think it was when Harbaugh was like just starting with the 49ers and he went across the field to shake Jim Schwartz's hands when he was the head coach
I
of the
do remember
Lions,
this. Yeah.
and he like just came in like way too hard. And like Schwartz like went after
Yeah.
him.
It was.
That's the first thing I think of, is just like that's why Harbaugh's gonna win this fight, if this hypothetical fight.
Yeah, we're treating Harbaugh like a human being here, and he's not. He's from a different planet. But yeah, that was kind of, I don't know. Sam, if you remember that, it was the I don't even know if you remember this one. You were alive in 2012, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I was.
Yeah. So yeah, it was the handshake between Bill O'Brien and Tim Beckman, the coach at Illinois, when he's Illinois was trying to recruit the Penn State players after 2011, when the NCAA made that legal or whatever. And O'Brien took severe offense to that because they were on campus trying to steal his players. And the night before the game, O'Brien says, I can't wait to not shake this guy's hand. And he did the same thing after the game. Penn State wins. He goes and looks for Beckman, and he just gives him this high five and runs away. Like, I don't know. But it was the same kind of the thing that Harbaugh did. But I don't think Harbaugh meant it. I know Bill did.
No,
I don't think Harbaugh meant
legitimately.
It.
He was like shocked. He's just like, what? I was just, you know.
Yeah, and I remember it was Schwartz kind of like took like 15 seconds and was like, did he just do that? And then decided I'm going to go after him. And Harbaugh was so confused. I'm going to miss him when he's ultimately fired for his transgressions. Because
what are you talking about? They're talking extension, Doc.
Oh, they were talking extension, Joe. Do you want him for another 20 years? Seriously, do you want him for another 20 years?
Here's the weird thing, Donnie. Michigan hasn't been this good in 20 years. So I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of things going on. Do I want to lose him and then go back to like losing to Ohio State every year? Not really. I don't know. I'm in the thick of it, man. I don't know.
All right, real quick prediction, Sam. What do you got?
I think Michigan beats Penn State probably by I'm gonna go. Let's do 27-17.
Okay, that's fair. Joe, how much are you picking Michigan to win by?
I actually was thinking something similar to Sam. I'm going to say 27-13. Michigan wins by two touchdowns.
I saw nothing against Ohio State that leads me that Penn State could score. And unless confidence plays a much bigger role in this game than unless the Maryland game is this gigantic line of demarcation for Penn State, I'm going 24-6. I just don't see Penn State coming out there and having the kind of game they need to have on offense to win the game. And I think it'll be close. I think it'll be a late touchdown to get it to that point for Michigan. Guys, been a pleasure. I know I had a lot more I wanted to talk about, but Joe just talked and talked and we're out of time now. So.
You know me, man. You know me.
All right. Thanks to Joe Berace for joining us this week. Sam Freeman, as always, for co-hosting this week. I'm Donnie Collins from the Times Tribune in Scranton. We'll be back next week to talk about what happened in Beaver Stadium on Saturday, Penn State's latest, biggest game of the year. Could they turn it around? We'll find out and we'll discuss it later on. We'll talk to you next week.